Hey friends, how y'all doing? Welcome to This Week in Mormons. Thanks for taking the time to be with us. We're glad to be here. It's been a rougher few days in the U.S. post-conference, which is our post-conference show where we're going to talk mostly about general conference.
But we measure all time in pre-conference and post-conference.
It's in units. We measure them in certain units of time. Having my hair relaxingly disheveled, 2 units. Playing pool, 3 units.
How many conferences? Yeah. No, that's fair.
A conference would literally be like, what, 40 units, 50 units, something crazy like that. It's a lot of conference units. It's a lot of time.
As they go.
Yeah. So
if we were going to put this into terms of talents and pence,
sure,
it's like a billion.
Well, I liked Elder Holland in his talk.
I know. That was great.
He did some currency conversion for us right there. Some would call him a currency manipulator.
I feel like that could have been a Planet Money episode.
Yeah, or they should do one on Book of Mormon money. I'm at the point, where is that? Is that in 2 Nephi?
And an Onum and a Tenum.
I basically just skip now, and then I get really excited that I knocked off like 14 verses of my nightly reading and say, awesome, shorter evening. That's how my mind works.
You don't read about Antes and...
And Senines?
All those good ones?
I don't feel like...
That's right. I kind of do the same thing reading the Old Testament, and you get to skip like once it goes into Begats and like all the crazy old laws they used to have. You're just like, sweet.
It gets rough once you hit Leviticus.
You just skip through almost all of Leviticus.
Leviticus is the Isaiah of the Old Testament, and Isaiah is the... Wait a minute.
I don't think that math works.
No, I don't know how to make that one play out.
I did not plan for this.
I did not hit her, so...
So, did you see they're doing a remake of that?
It's not a remake. It's like a biopic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a little bit brilliant.
I have a coworker named Mark, and for a long time, I've always just been like, oh, hi, Mark, when he comes in, and he never really fully understood it until I finally showed him all of the wonders of the room, and now he gets it. It was fun for me for a long time, for literally years, because I just laughed to myself.
Like,
oh, hi, Mark.
It was a long con.
So now he walks up to me, and he's like, I did not hit her. I'm like, yes. Very well.
I did not.
Well done, sir. So, you still in Utah? What are you doing?
Yeah, I'm in Utah until the morning, and then I fly to Denver, Colorado.
What? What is there?
Hey, people that I know and love.
I went to a delightful ice cream place in Denver.
Well, more up towards Boulder, let's be honest.
I've never been to Boulder.
In Denver.
That's cool.
Yeah, no, it'll be a good time. Then I go home. Go back to my sweet wife. Everything's great then.
Yes, good. That sounds fulfilling. Did you happen to check out the tabernacle replica in Provo? Last week we talked about this.
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't.
Al, you had one job.
I cared while we were talking, and then I didn't care at all.
Remember years ago you were supposed to get us a tour of the Granite Mountain because we had a hookup?
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Yeah.
I didn't do that either.
No, we didn't do that either.
No, there's a lot of that stuff that I'm like... It's just too much Utah for me.
The Granite Mountains.
I can only take it in doses.
The Granite Mountains an even bigger deal now because the church officially discontinued microfilm last month.
So are they throwing it all away?
I think they've digitized all of it. I don't know what they'll be doing with all of the microfilm, but that's it. Like, there's no.
Hope they don't shred it. I just want to find little random pieces, and I'll be like,
well, now the Granite Mountains just going to become a dope server room. It's just going to be a big old server space.
All the microfilm could fit on 1 terabyte drive.
Probably. Their server room will just be this Dell Optiplex they picked up.
It's just a SAN device, like just some random 10 terabyte.
What is cool there, though, if none of you have ever, I've never been to the Granite Mountain, and for anyone who's not familiar with it, it's a vault in Little or Big Cottonwood Canyon. I don't remember. But in the Cottonwood Canyon. And it's where the church maintains its records for genealogy. And there's a big repository of microfilm, but there's even an underground lake inside the back of it. It's fascinating.
There's a lake in it?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. There's an actual like subterranean or interior lake, however you want to call it. Yeah, there's all kinds of crazy stuff in there.
Did they find that just carving in a cave?
I think so. You can Google pictures of it. There's one time they let... I don't know if they let the media in or they at least had a church photographer.
I feel like that'd be a little nerve-wracking to be building your cave and then find a lake.
I think it would be awesome. I feel like Harry Potter, man. Boom. 6th book. You don't want to find those in fairy down there in the water. Don't touch the water. The water, Al. Well, that's exciting for you, my friend. Excited to see it. We are we're moving this weekend, so that's a lot of exciting stuff.
I don't see a picture of the lake.
Oh, you're not even paying attention.
Oh, well. Oh, you're moving. That's right.
No, it's okay. Let's keep talking about the Granite Mountain.
I got pictures of the vault. I see no pictures of a lake inside the vault.
There was some picture I saw of the thing.
I don't think that's true.
I swear this is real.
I think you're a nice guy, though.
Yeah. Whatever. I want to go in there. That's all I'm saying. I want to go to there.
You should go to
that there. Can't be it. Here's a picture of some underground thing with a semi driving through it. I don't think we quite
know. No.
That's not it.
I'm just doing in the redwoods now?
Yeah.
So you're moving. Have you packed everything and labeled all your boxes?
We're doing pretty well, thanks to my wife.
Will you be using your Elder's Quorum?
I'm shamelessly exploiting the inbound Elder's Quorum because we don't know anybody in the ward at all.
Oh, that's smart. You're doing your guys a solid.
I don't have the network there yet to work on, so I straight up called it in. On this end, on the outgoing end, we have just people coming over to help out.
Just to say goodbye?
And I'll have to do one of my least favorite things, which is drive a big vehicle. Don't like big vehicles, don't want to drive them, but I've got to drive that moving truck, and I'm not going to love it.
Are you doing a U-Haul?
Yes. not U-Haul Excuse brand, me. But yes, about a 16-footer. You know, it's going to be good.
Wow.
Yeah. I've moved a lot of people.
We just moved all of our stuff from Utah. So I had like 3 bags and some sheets.
Sure.
And that made it back in the old Camry. But my wife had a few things, knickknacks and stuff from growing up. So we had a storage unit of stuff. And so we came and rented a 12-footer. And since it was her stuff, I made her drive it back.
Oh, that's fair. It was better to do it that way. You didn't want us to do like a pod or anything, have them ship it over to you?
So the pods, the math breakdown was like, it's like it's like $1,200 to $1,500 maybe.
Pods aren't cheap. Pods are not cheap.
But then to drive it, it was like $500 plus $300 in gas. We saved $200 and road trip, right?
Well, not the part back. But yes.
Yeah.
She just by herself driving across the plains.
No, she did it with a friend.
Okay, well, that's good.
And had somebody come out to visit and hang out. So it ended up being it was a good deal. But everybody that's like, you made your wife drive the U-Haul.
You're a jerk.
I was waiting.
Keep my shorts out.
Backing up in the big rigs, and so she, you know, the call from Wyoming. It's like I don't know where to go, but she did it. She did a great job. Backed it up and all the stuff with no problem. Stayed in Walmart parking lot. Slept in the back like a pro. That didn't happen. That'd be funny, though.
No, you can't spring for the $50 roadway in. You can't do it. It's too much. No.
Did you remember how crappy we would sleep? If you were road tripping or something, you would park in like a hotel parking lot. You'd go all the way to the hotel, park in the parking lot, and sleep there.
Sure.
Like it, man, $50 was so much money back in the day.
I know. When I was moving to DC, my Camry is just stuffed to the brim with gear. Like my whole rear end of the car is very weighed down. Like wheel well.
Yeah, this is an old Camry, not like a fancy new one. Like
you know, no, not like yours. I've got a 2000 Camry. Drive it proudly, loud and proud, very proud. And I only stayed in a hotel twice, but man, I was nervous because my whole life was in that car. And the second time I did it, the first time I was in the little motel, it was right outside my door, so I was feeling pretty okay. But then I went to like a Motel 6 in Knoxville or something one night, and there I was up inside the building on the third floor, and I was just like,
no, you had never seen him.
I was just like, do you guys like monitor the parking lot? Is that a
that is kind of a scary feeling, man. Somebody punches that window and you're like, well, that was all my stuff.
It's a little nerve-wracking, especially because that night was super late, and I was just trying to get some sleep. Whereas the other one, I had some time, so I unloaded some of the valuables and just put them in. It was easy. Anyway, point is, yeah, it's a little.
What valuables do you have as a 25-year-old? Your baseball cards?
My monitor.
Your CRT monitor?
No, my like 1.5K monitor, okay? It's a little above 1080p. It's not 2K. It's not a retina screen. A little. Yeah. It's 2048 instead of 1920, okay? It's got a little bit of extra juice.
People aren't stealing those like they used to anymore.
No, not really. So I've got to get back in conference mode here after the tragedy in Vegas. And I hate, I'm also pretty bummed that Tom Petty died. That was kind of a bad hit too.
Yeah, those aren't on par with each other. But
not on par with each other, but
still sad. And then Puerto Rico still, like, people are dying right now in Puerto Rico.
And according to Trump, we've spent a lot of money there. That's what he said today.
Jeff, when it's your own personal checks you're writing,
sure, that's what he is. He's our
maybe
man.
It stings a little more. Thanks, Donald.
So anyway, we're trying to get back in the conference thing. That's what this episode is. Talk about some conference talks and our thoughts and how we enjoyed the weekend. And that's the gist of what we're doing here today, folks. No major news that we'll touch on, except for the there's a petition to overturn the beard ban at BYU on change.org. Head over to This Week in Mormons. We got an article on it. You can sign the petition if you want.
Wait, like what? So do you have any expectation that, like, if all of popular opinion at BYU said we demand Coca-Cola, they'd actually listen? Or if they said we demand to have beards, that the faculty would care?
I would normally say no. The only thing that I think at least puts BYU on a weaker footing, if we're talking about it in terms of victory and defeat, is that BYU's excuse for the caffeine lift is that there had not previously been demand for it and consumer tastes had changed and the demand was clear. So if BYU is saying we will shift a policy based on demand, that does leave the door open a little bit for people to say, well, the beard policy is dumb too, and there is heavy demand to allow beards. Maybe there's that, but I don't expect much. I don't.
Boy, what would BYU even be if it didn't ban beards?
It can still be stone cold sober, but now that they allow caffeine, everyone's going to be a little more uppity than they used to be. I hope this doesn't affect their Princeton Review rankings next year. That would just be a tragedy.
I mean, I'll sign it.
Anywho, that's the main gist, and of course,
that's the main news right now.
Well, that and Elder Hales passed away, and that was kind of crazy. That happened during conference. I did some light research, and I don't know if there's been another time when an apostle has died mid conference. I mean, he died 15 minutes after the Sunday morning session ended, and they announced it in the Sunday afternoon session. It was crazy.
I met Elder Hales once out in Hawaii. He and Elder Monson at the time came out to speak, and he's just such a meek, quiet guy.
Yeah.
You know, just really diligent, doing his thing. I had shaken Brother Monson's hand, or Elder Monson's hand, president now. And was still, like, I was kind of awestruck. So, like, they're walking in the building and I shake their hands. I was doing security at the back door. Shake President Monson's hand. He walks in. I, like, turn and look at him. Then I turn to look back. And Elder Hales has his hand out to shake. But, like, because I was staring at President Monson, I totally missed him. And so I stiffed Elder Hales on the handshake. He just walked by. And I was hoping that he'd, like, run it up through his hair or something and be like, what you at?
That's a pretty good story. It's not as good as the time you told off Cecil Samuelson, but that's still pretty good.
Or the time that Elder Arnold, I told him Arnold to screw off or something like that.
I don't think you've told this one to our people, Al. Do you want to share the story with the class?
Yeah, well, so let's see. A little while ago, I was serving on the High Council in my stakeout in Missouri.
Let's let everyone take a second and pause to take that in.
Guess what?
All right, keep going.
Guess what? I'm worthy in the Lord's eyes, maybe what? Not your eyes, Twim Nation. So when they change stake presidents, they interview everybody to make sure, or, you know, to, like, find the next stake president.
Right.
And so they're calling them all in. I was like, listen, guys, you're not going to call the single bearded dude. I know that I'm not stepping into this role. You don't. They're like, no, you should do it. You should do it. And so I went down there and we met, and it was like, gosh, we ended up spending about 15 minutes with this Area 70 telling me why I was doing, you know, like, why I should be married, and I could be married if I really wanted it and had the faith and blah, blah, blah.
If you just believe. Yeah.
And, you know, call him. He wants me to write him a letter in a year and tell him tell him that I'm married and blah, blah. And I was like, so I stopped him. I stopped him towards the end and said, screw you, man. Like, what the garbage are you talking about?
I hope you said exactly that.
This is a quote. This is a quote. I was like, you have no idea the conversations me and the Lord have been having, right? Like, my job is to stay flexible and close to the Lord, and I am exactly where I'm supposed to be. And I'll agree to your one-year thing because I feel like I'm in the place where the Lord wants me, and I actually feel like I will be married in a year. And in fact,
you did pretty well.
I was close. Yeah. But I was like, but this has nothing to do with you and your perception of my relationship with God. So don't you even worry about that. And he was like, he paused, to his credit, he paused for a minute and he said, you know what? I've actually never agreed to this or said this, but like, I think you're actually right. I think that you are where the Lord needs you to be, and you just keep on doing you. You know, I spent a lot of time sort of weeding through that and making sure that I wasn't screwing everything up by like running a business or living in Missouri or all that stuff. And turns out you can get your own revelation, and even when a 70 is rampaging on you, you just say, get out of here.
On the flip side, I think someone could take that experience and use it to like question the inspiration of a general authority, right? Like if you're just turning around on them and they say, well, you know, maybe so. I don't think that's the case.
Well, I have absolute confidence in the inspiration of the brethren at the top. I have absolute confidence in the inspiration of a lot of brethren, like right here, sort of at the local level. And the ones in between are super hit and miss. I mean, you got to be honest.
That's why they release them when they're 70.
You get some weird ones. You get some good ones. You get some people that are like super spiritual. You get some good businessmen in there that are maybe less spiritual. You get some. You know, it's just like a pretty, pretty broad mix that serves in the quorum, as it is with any quorum. But I don't know, when you have a weird interaction with one of the guys in the middle, that doesn't spook me very much.
Well, it's hard when you're a 70 because, you know, those keys are much more diluted than in the 12, right? You know, it's just much tougher.
Well, even in the 12, man, I love those brothers in that quorum. But, to expect perfection, I just feel like there's a lot of room for the atonement of Jesus Christ, even in the upper echelons of the Mormon church.
I will respect that. Well, good story,
Al. So anyway, Elder Hales.
Way to tell him off. So Elder Hales, Robert E. Hales, passed away. He was 85. He'd long had health complications. You've probably seen him for many, many years giving his talks seated with those glasses on that have the oxygen coming through them.
Those are brilliant.
They are very brilliant. I'm curious who makes those and where they came from.
Warby Parker.
He'd had health problems. He'd had two heart attacks in his life. I mean, he'd struggled with his health for a long time. But I didn't expect that was going to happen. I mean, a rumor started going around before conference that President Monson had passed away. Because I think people misunderstood the press release that President Monson would not be attending conference at all. And it was right around then. It started picked up on some subreddit. And everyone starts going around saying, oh my goodness, I have it on good authority. President Monson is dead. We had people sending us screenshots of like, my friend's friend works at the COB. And they said President Monson had passed away. But it didn't happen.
Like, listen, if you haven't heard it from us, it hasn't happened, okay?
Well, it got to the point that the church spokesman had to come out there and be like, no, President Monson is alive, okay? Yes, he's slowed down and he can't...
We had the same thing with Tom Petty.
Yeah, that told... I was holding out for hope yesterday that I'd wake up this morning and they'd say something like Tom pulled through. You know, something happened, but...
He was a Lazarus of a musician.
I really love Tom Petty. It's very sad. It's very sad.
I saw your Facebook post.
Love Tom Petty. Anyway, so conference then. Let's just dive right in here for the next few minutes.
Wait, don't you have an Elder Hales memory you can share?
I don't know if I have a specific memory.
Didn't you accidentally stiff him on a handshake or something?
I've never stiffed Elder Hales on a handshake. I was mostly moved by him when I read his book Return. I go back to this. You know, every now and then we just randomly get different churchy books, and I think I saw that one on a whim and asked for it for Christmas or something like that. And I was really impressed. It's a good book about returning to our Father in heaven. And I've always found that Elder Hales, I've not found to be, I think he's a perfectly good speaker. I've not found him to be like too dry or anything for me, but he is very, like you said, he's very meek. He's very quiet. He's not a work of the room type speaker.
Yeah.
And so as such, it can't be easy to miss that his talks and his entire ministry was really rich. And it's well worth going back and reading through a lot of his talks and watching them too. That's what I remember most, in that he taught me a lot about seeing past some of the showmanship of discipleship and of the way we teach the gospel to people, and that it's not all about like how smooth you are. It's about how pure you are in the doctrine you're teaching.
It was interesting when Elder Anderson, in the last session, when he read his he had a brief, dude, like three sentences from Elder Hales.
Yeah.
That he shared. And, I mean, they're really profound. They were like, I think the phrasing, correct me on this, but I think he said, if you choose to have the faith, or you can choose to have the faith to return to your Father in heaven, or it was all about like this principle, this idea of developing the faith to return to your Heavenly Father.
Yeah.
Is that right? Am I thinking of that phraseology right?
That's about there. I don't have it written down either, and they don't have the...
But it was... I mean, even the word choice of, like, you can choose to have that faith to go back to your Heavenly Father, and the idea of developing that faith whose sole purpose is to be used as we return to our Heavenly Father. I mean, it's just, like, really sort of thoughtful, especially, I mean, when you put it in the context of this guy who is actively returning.
Yeah. Yeah.
To be with Heavenly Father, you know, for him to pen those words was really powerful, I thought.
And faith is a choice. It's so hard to remember that sometimes. That faith isn't just something we have that's there and then we try to cultivate it. Like sometimes we choose to act faithfully on something.
Well, you certainly choose to take the seed into your heart, right? Like the act, like as faith evolves, I think a lot of it sort of grows with us. And as part of our experiences and our sort of fabric that we weave, but in the beginning, there's, you know, it's you either take the seed or you don't, you plant it or you don't.
And you know what else I love from Elder Anderson? I guess we're starting at the back. He was the very last talk, but I also, even just the phraseology, how he said Elder Hales graduated from mortality today. I just love thinking of it that way.
It's a little cheesy, but. The 19-year-old girl who gets engaged in the singles ward is like, I'm graduating.
There is that too. But hey, I like that.
I was like, geez, Elder Hales.
But what I really like,
Mallory.
What I really liked from Elder Anderson, though, was after he shared that, and he said, like, these were remarks he prepared, and I was, like, permitted to come and read them to you, was that then he expressed how President Nelson, as the quorum president of the 12, skipped his lunch and his other meetings between the two sessions and felt impressed to go and see Bob, essentially. And so he was there at his bedside when he passed away. And that's a nice thing in and of itself, but it taught me something really valuable. It reminded me that the quorum of the 12 is a quorum with a president who's looking out for the other 11 and looking out for their lives and has responsibility over them. It's really easy, I think, to look at the 12 and just say, these are all these busy guys doing their thing in the church, and President Nelson's the oldest one, has been there the longest, so he's the president of the 12. But he's actually a quorum president with specific responsibilities over that quorum, which, I don't know, it just spoke to me and reminded me that, hey, you know, it's different from being an elder's quorum president, but he's still a quorum president with the responsibilities of quorum president. And
yeah,
good leadership reminder, the way we do things. Then I thought about president quorums that don't have full presidencies, and I think the only ones are the 12 and the 70, right?
Even 70 has,
they've got the seven presidents, but as far as like the president and usually two counselors set up, or at least president counselor set up, I think it's just the 12 and the 70 don't have that. Doesn't every other quorum have the typical setup?
Man.
What I'm saying is President Nelson should call two counselors, really mix it up here, and be like, what now, First Presidency? According to Doctrine and Covenants 107, we are equal in power and authority between our two respective quorums, but there's 12 of us and there's three of you. What now?
They should play a flag football game.
Here's a question you might know, though, Al. Speaking of authority and keys. So when President Monson is not incapacitated, but unable to participate as he is right now, how do you think that works from a day-to-day workflow of the church? Obviously, his counselors are handling the affairs of the First Presidency of their quorum and working with the 12. But even things like calling a new apostle with Elder Hales having passed away. I wonder what that process is supposed to be like when they all pray about it together, but in the end the call is to be issued from the president of the church. What do they do? Do you have any insights?
Like where the president of the church is actually incapacitated?
Well, in the sense that we're kind of with now. I mean, President Monson is still there, but we know he's not doing any...
Right now we know that the Elder Uchtdorf and Elder Eyring just a couple times a week go visit and brief President Monson on the affairs of the church.
Yeah. So I wonder, though, who's going to be involved in, say, filling that vacancy in the 12?
Well, if I had to guess based on what I've observed in the past, it would be Elder Eyring and Elder Uchtdorf would host a session with the 12, and they would come up with suggestions and go through. They go through and, like, everybody... We've heard this story before. They all write a name down.
They do. I guess I wonder in particular
how
it works.
So you run that process, and then President Monson, I would suspect, is just there for approval. He's going to... Like, the quorum's going to do the work, and he's going to say yes or no.
They would, but it's also sacred work they do in their upper meeting rooms in the temple. So I wonder if you've got a prophet who's as worn down physically as President Monson, does he muster up the strength to go to the temple to be there for those meetings? That's so important.
No, well, especially because he gets more and more sick, right?
That's what I'm saying, because it might be too sacred of a process.
President Monson, or President Benson and President Kimball all did the same thing, where they had years where they were unable to attend to the affairs of the church.
Yep.
And I mean, as long... I remember Elder Perry talking to us one time. I was just like, hey, you know, as missionaries, this was 15 years ago, he says, hey, listen, the hierarchy of this quorum is a sacred thing. And if the Lord doesn't want me in line next to do what I'm going to be doing, he'll take me home. I'll be released and dead. And that's just the way that it works. And, you know, so if President Monson is incapacitated, you've got to trust that that sort of line of authority has been preserved to the point where people that will be doing the work are the right people.
I trust that completely. I'm not saying that's not the case.
Elder
Nelson himself actually gave a talk on that a couple of years ago when President Monson was clearly ailing a bit, even though he was still coming to conference. And I think that was kind of a preemptive move to remind us how it works. I just thought about something as sacred as calling a member of the 12, which you assume would have to happen in the temple because of the nature of it. It's not like they can just all go over to President Monson's house afterwards and be like, hey, can we close up some doors here and get real for a second?
I don't know, man.
I wonder what they do.
Honestly, there's nothing like the calling, even in the temple, is just tradition, right? I think you could have any quiet place with a prayer and it's just as ready.
We could, but we don't know everything about the process or how their weekly meetings work in the temple. I don't know if when they're in, I don't want to be inappropriate about it, but I don't know if when they're meeting in the temple, if they just wear their whites or if they wear temple clothes to have their meetings. I'm not sure how all that works out and what's necessary. I don't know.
But I hope they're in like the robes of the temple.
That's what I'm saying. Like, are they in their temple attire?
Because that's one of my favorite times, is walking around fully clothed. You're just like, what's up, people? Feeling good.
Yes, that's exactly what I did the first time I went through.
I'm expecting the eternities to be very fancy.
like a cruise ship, just brass everywhere. So a conference, we talked about the women's meeting a little bit last week, but we let off with, if you're ready, Al, I don't know if you have any notes, but President Uchtdorf, Saturday morning,
the colonel,
what do we got there?
I felt like, and this may be an unpopular opinion, I felt like President Uchtdorf kind of phoned it in this conference.
You know what, I'm going to a little bit agree with you. I'm not going to say phone it in.
No.
But very often he has given really standout talks. I felt that his two talks in conference this time were fine, but neither of them was as, like, where it counted.
It felt very, like, just keep on keeping on type. However, President Anderson quoted President Uchtdorf in his talk. That was one of the standouts for him, which was cool when Elder Anderson, like, he had his conference notes all written out.
And you're like, oh man, you didn't get a transcript beforehand or anything and figure out your talk. You've literally been, everyone else has been sitting there.
He listened and took notes.
This is what makes me feel bad. I wish I could have been in the conference center. All the other 12 of the brethren are just sitting there enjoying the remarks and just being like, yep, well, it's my turn. I'll do my thing on the teleprompter. He's sitting there with his notepad, fastidiously scribbling down quotes and ideas for the whole conference.
It was a little bit remarkable, because I've gotten lazier in my note-taking, because I'm like, heard that before. I know the atonement's blah, blah, blah. And, you know, like you just, you hear it so much, especially like a restoration talk. Oh my gosh. Tell me the story of Joseph Smith one more time, Elder Perry. And to have him sort of like be taking notes and like really, really, you know, pausing to think about it, be inspired by the talks given, all of them not looking to be entertained, as I think often we fall into the trap of like,
yeah,
what do you got that's big?
Yeah.
So
anyway, back to President Uchtdorf. I'm with you there. I mean, it was fine. He talked about Bobby the dog, you know, like crossed the country to find his owners.
I thought that was the Homeward Bound story.
I was going to be like, so this is just the plot to Homeward Bound. That's all we got here. That's
it. Came back.
Apparently it's based on a true story.
To the bone.
I hope they remake Homeward Bound soon. It's been too long.
Yeah, with Jonathan Taylor Thomas as the dad. Okay, Sister Oscarson.
Yes, take me there, Al. What do you got?
What was hers? Let me see. I've got.
She had some great lines here. She talked about that one about, are we too ambitious in trying to save the world that we miss
out to? How much value is there in fixing the world if the people around us are falling apart?
Yeah, what good does it? I think the actual quote is, "What good does it do to save the world if we neglect the needs of those closest to us?"
Mm.
That was good. I liked that a lot. I thought she gave a pretty strong talk.
Begin your service in your own homes. Yeah, no, she did a good job. I felt like the women really represented well this conference.
Oh, they did very well. Even though, no women prayed. And we talked about this 6 months ago as if it was a curiosity that the inspiration...
Jeff, we already ticked the box, right? A woman prayed in conference. It's not a big deal anymore.
I am admittedly curious about it now because now it seems more deliberate. I mean, inspiration to have people pray is what it is. But we went from a number of years of... You know, mixing it up and having the ladies pray to last time in April. Well, okay, maybe none prayed. That happens, and then this time, once again, did they have some kind of meeting where they said, "Oh, we can't actually do this"? I mean, I don't know.
Hey, I think out of sight, out of mind. You know, the Relief Society is in another building.
Yeah, they share a building with all the other women. You know, they're not going to forget that the Relief Society back in the day used to have an office right next to the First Presidency, and then they moved them.
Shady.
Unfortunate moments in church history.
So, Elder Oaks.
Oh,
Elder Oaks has been getting some crazy play.
Yeah, right?
People are very passionate about him. Well, this was another of just like, it felt like the normal standard fare. Hey, that proclamation of the family. We believe it. Still the thing.
Well, yeah, you have to remember that back in the 90s, some people thought it was a convenient legal type document.
Where are you reading the history to this? Is that
just all Kate Kelly. I listen to Kate Kelly's Sirius XM channel, and that's what
it's good. No, but like, is there a book or somewhere or something I should be reading?
I don't know if there's a book. I wish I had them handy. I saw some people post some memes that showed a timeline of some things that were going on with U.S.
Congress. You're getting this data from memes?
I'm getting it from memes on Twitter, friend. Now, ones that at least make you think and want to back up and do the research yourself. So I feel like that was part of it, because Elder Oaks bothered to say that this is a divinely inspired document. This wasn't something out of convenience. This is actually doctrine from the Lord that we received. And I think the background on that for the family proclamation was pretty interesting. It was kind of funny that it only took three talks for someone to get on the family proclamation. But his main point was that, like, no, this is a part of our doctrine that you need to take seriously and follow. You know, it's crucial in all of our personal choices. And, of course, then he mentioned that a lot about same-sex marriage, cohabitation, how basically we had a lot of these standards. And that's the interesting thing about the family proclamation, because in 1995... If you would have told people in 1995, guess what? Gay marriage is going to be legal in 20 years. People would be like, yeah, right. That's not going to be a thing.
It's true.
If you would have told them a lot of the issues that we're facing today would be legal, would be normal, people would be like, no, there's no way. Because you really think about how rapidly some of this stuff has changed in the world. And that was sort of one of his points, that we had these long periods of history of this understanding of men and women, of families, of marriage. And then all of a sudden, in a matter of 30 years, the whole thing just snowballed and went to a different place. And so I believe he was trying to remind us of that.
Yeah, it is like this. I remember when it came out at the time. I was just like, this is so boring. Why would you bother to write this? And now it's like one of the most controversial documents in the church.
Sort of. Other good mention. I saw something on Twitter about it that the mentions of the world, because this talk kind of railed on the world once more. So someone threw some stats up there that said mentions of the world hit its peak in the 1920s during General Conference with 3,900 mentions.
Jeez.
Across church stuff. And it's been going downhill ever since. But Elder Oaks, you know, brought it back. I also found it interesting that he used the language converted Latter-day Saints. He said this many times. He didn't just say Latter-day Saints understand this. He'd say converted Latter-day Saints understand, which was almost kind of a red line situation, I guess.
What else did I have? I had expect the world to be at odds with the teachings of Christ. It's sort of a reminder of like,
yeah.
There were a couple references to this where he's like, it's not supposed to be unchallenged doctrines.
Mm-hmm.
It's not supposed to be widely accepted by everyone as the right way. Like, get ready, folks, because likely the teachings of Jesus Christ are going to be at odds with what the rest of the world is teaching, which made me pause a little bit, because I think we kind of get caught in this idea that like, everybody will like what we teach, that a lot of the people that join the church will join the church because the doctrines are so attractive. And like, we can convince everybody that this is such a great church with all the answers. And the reality is like, the history does not say that.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. And then like you referenced at the beginning, Al, that the media has kind of been freaking out about this, because he reiterated that the church's opposition to gay marriage is not going anywhere, even as we navigate other waters around the issue. And that's why all of a sudden I saw all my news alerts popping up from all the mainstream thing, like prominent Mormon leader says the church is against gay marriage. It's like, well, yes, that hasn't...
It's still there.
Did that change?
Yeah.
I think they were expecting us to change, perhaps.
I think a lot of people were hoping that it would be, the views were softening. We've seen great indicators of donating money to gay and lesbian organizations and like supporting and trying to be more loving and open, while at the same time reiterating that this is not, you know, we're loving our neighbors. This is not something that we're endorsing, however. And I think people were kind of hoping that it would, you know, that we were in a space where they could change the proclamation of the family a little bit.
Could you imagine? We're issuing an amendment to the family proclamation.
I certainly can. I mean, like, we've seen it with blacks in the priesthood. Like, it's not unheard of to think of doctrine changing. But
well, like, blacks in the priesthood was not doctrine, though. Remember that. That wasn't doctrine.
It's pretty well understood as doctrine, though.
It was well understood, but even the church has gone out of its way to say this was never doctrine.
Even if we've passed the proclamation to other races that aren't white.
Yeah, something like that. So, Elder Oaks was everywhere. John C. Pingree, I have no notes.
I like Pingree.
Okay, tell me what you got.
He challenged us to ask, what is our personal ministry? And then he said, we each have spiritual gifts. We need to pray to know what they are. See, yeah, discover and develop spiritual gifts. Well, it was interesting because I kind of had this association in my head of like, I remember somebody told me once that if you weren't getting great revelation in the temple, to pray and ask God to teach you how to learn in the temple, and that he would. And I kind of felt that same nudge from Elder Pingree where he said, go figure out what your spiritual gifts are. And if you don't think that you have any, you do. Pray to understand them.
Thank you for reminding me of this. I remember this document. This was good. I liked it.
Yeah, you know. What about Brother D. Todd?
Mostly on the sacrament. I enjoyed it. It was very interesting how much he talked about sort of the history of the understanding of, you know, partaking of the blood and body of Christ. So that was kind of interesting. It was almost like going out of his way to slam Catholicism in a way.
I never heard the reference to... He shared some quip about like, when they break the bread, it's like no two pieces of bread are the same.
Yeah. Right.
And I actually forget the point he was necessarily making, but the idea that like we're getting a unique representation or a unique symbol of the Savior was kind of interesting to me.
Well, the whole idea of transubstantiation is very interesting to me, like how it got there, why there's a doctrinal belief elsewhere that you're actually eating the actual body and blood of Christ. Like, why would it not be symbolic? It's really interesting to me because I think symbolism of it makes perfect sense.
Hey, carnivores need a community.
I mean, it reminds us of the Savior's sacrifice for us. And
Elder Holland, I thought, was like a banner talk, though.
Yes, 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 yes. Go ahead. Tell me more. Teach me.
So this one felt, I'd actually been having a discussion with a buddy of mine the day before, and we were talking about this space of all the things that are in the church that you have to go and knock out, all the to-dos, all the everything, and how to navigate that space and how to not, how guilty do you feel? How much pressure should you put on yourself? All this stuff. And to have Elder Holland come out and just be like, hey, listen, the joke at the beginning of like, you have all these commandments you got to keep, love one another, all that stuff. That's not hard enough. Then be perfect. Yeah. And he shared some great context around that your job is to be perfect with the Savior. But like, don't, his analogy or his recounting of the parable of the talents, or not the talents, but the debtor, where the guy had 100 pence debt, or he was forgiven like a talent debt, and then he had 100 pence debt to somebody else that he wouldn't forgive. And when he drew that into dollars, he's like, 100 pence is like $100. And then the talent is like $1 billion. It's such a huge, crazy number that you can't even comprehend it. And to have that one be forgiven so readily, just this crazy sum of money. And then for us to turn around and look for that $100 and demand it. That was one of those that I really needed the modernization of it to understand and appreciate the gravity of that. I thought it was great.
And there was that great concept of toxic perfectionism. That was
avoid toxic. Line.
And he's given talks like that in the past in different areas of that. And I really appreciate that because way too easily we try to measure ourselves against everybody else. We read Matthew 5:48 when the Lord commands us to be perfect and we get all stressed out about being perfect and not realizing that it's a process, that Heavenly Father's patient with us, that we're striving to do these things and do them better. But that's the whole point of mortality is to get better. And
I thought it was interesting how he said this idea of perfectionism. He said Satan has made covenants and commandments into curses that oppress us, or some rendition of that, right? This idea that I've heard this too, where people are like, I don't want to go to the temple. I'm not, I don't want to be like, have all those covenants to take care of. I don't want to mess with that. Just the covenants you'd make with your Heavenly Father, the baptism things where it's like, oh, that's almost a weight that I have to carry. I think he's done a great job PR-wise of like messaging how constricting covenants and commandments are. And it's like, man, when you're trying to be perfect and you don't want to take on more responsibility or more expectation of like living up to the commandments of God, it's that would be so exhausting. There's a real value in dialing it back and looking at what the Savior is trying to teach you and your relationship with God, rather than how perfect are you living at all.
Yeah, I love that. I feel like so much of Elder Holland's ministry of late has been about grounding us. And I love that about it. I
think we live in a fallen world. Perfection is still pending.
Yeah.
Focus on Christ's achievements instead of our shortcomings. I thought that was...
Yeah, that's a huge one.
Really powerful. Our only hope in perfection is to get it as a gift and work on the little things and how we speak, act, and live, and the big things the Lord will fix.
Yeah. Also, there have been no flawless performances on this earth.
Yeah.
Except for Christ. Yeah.
The
good stuff there.
Yeah, that one for me was like, stop. I've listened to it twice since.
Yeah.
It was just really good. It was really powerful.
My goal, I'm terrible about this. I need to go back and study the talks more. Like, I'm awful about doing this after every conference. I say I'm going to and I don't. I was talking to a buddy of mine yesterday. We were at lunch and he was saying he's always struggled with the same thing, but he really got serious about it. He had some family tragedies happen in his life in the past year or so. And he's like, so I got really serious about it. He's like, man, it changed a lot of things for me. It really helped me to develop a habit and like crave, you know, the words of Living Prophets, which I thought was cool. Elder Stevenson led off the Sunday afternoon session.
We have 7 minutes.
Okay.
Just kidding.
He led it off with the eclipse. Of course, folks, this is one of many references to the eclipse because even though it happened in August, the fact that it passed over a heavily Mormon part of the world, Bend, up there Oregon. In Idaho, made everybody just flip their lid and it was just eclipses.
A remarkable event for America.
It was cool. I wish I could have seen the totality. We barely had anything in California where I was. But I do like that he talked about how the whole point of the eclipse talk was how the moon is very small. It's much smaller than the earth and much smaller than the sun. But because of its placement between us and the sun, where it is in the sky, it's perfectly sized to block out the sun, which is kind of remarkable when you think of the astrophysics of it, right? I mean, the moon could be a little bit smaller and it would potentially not block the sun because it wouldn't quite have the diameter to block it completely, but it does exactly. And that's pretty neat. So he talked about how there are, you know, small things that can also mask where we are trying to get to, things that can get in the way. And even good things that we seek after.
It's like all, he said,
milestones. Yeah, milestones can become millstones, right? Even good things can cause spiritual eclipse. It can get dark very quickly because something gets in the way.
I just hope there's not like gospel eclipse glasses that will be sold soon, because He kept referencing the glasses, where I'm like, hey, if you're like us out in Missouri, we just use a Coke can and try and cover it with some foil. Those were our glasses. We didn't have these fancy newfangled ones, but talked about having gospel glasses that allow us to pass that.
Well, you know, hopefully we're not going to have like we had the, who did that when they were selling the stuff a couple conferences ago, that 70? I forgot what it was though now.
I forget what it was too. Ponderize.
Ponderize. There it was. Man, they were ready. He was ready to go. Then we had Stephen W. Owen.
Wow.
You got anything there, Al?
Wow.
He actually talked about
Owen missionaries. Owen is like Owen Wilson.
Missionaries keeping the faith.
Yep.
Don't get lazy with spiritual stuff, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Elder Cook spoke about humility, which I thought was an interesting topic, and it was a good one to explore. Did you get anything from him? Well, he was the one, another thing the media picked up on a lot, they say Mormon leader said, blah, Mormon leader denounced racism.
Elder Cook did. Anyone who claims superiority.
Yes, nationalism, superiority based on certain things. And we've certainly seen much of that in the news over the past couple of months. And he just went right after it, which was great. And I love to see the church.
Who is the goofy,
engaging
Mormon housewife one? Is that her?
Oh, there's Wife with a Purpose. Who I've only someone on Twitter, that's all I've got, said that she apparently might be Catholic now, that she might have left our ranks.
No.
Which, if she had, that actually makes me sad, because obviously I disagree profoundly with everything she's been doing, but I also hope she was not driven away from our faith because of the.
Well, hey, when the first presidency takes the time to issue statements that say you're wrong, perhaps.
It usually doesn't work out.
Perhaps a little
well.
Pride was hurt there.
Yeah, there's another talk about pride at a different point. He even talked about authenticity, which is an interesting term that we hear a lot of nowadays. You know, I'm trying to be my authentic self. You hear that thrown around? I'm trying to be authentic.
Sure, sure.
That gets thrown around a lot nowadays. And I personally do feel that many have thrown it around to say, I'm being my authentic self. It doesn't matter what else is expected of me, like by God
like,
or anything else.
Wait, we're supposed to be trying to be something different.
Exactly. We're supposed to be trying to be something different. We should be who we authentically are, but you can't use it as an excuse to just like bag keeping the commandments or trying to become a better person, because that's not your authentic self. So I did not mind that he called people out on that. It was good.
Yeah. Elder Rasband. Rasband, let's see, what do I have on me? That was the Like he doesn't he doesn't believe in coincidences, this guy.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't believe in coincidences, this guy.
I'm not down with that.
This guy. Yeah, actually, that was a cool topic, too.
Talked about divine design.
Mm-hmm. And yep. I enjoyed this, actually, because I just finished reading a book from Elder Bednar, where he also wrote, the book's topic was not about divine design necessarily, but he talked about how there are all these experiences he's had as an apostle and that we have, and that they're not coincidences, that the Lord places us in certain situations, things that make no sense to us, specifically so that we can reach the One. And after having just read that last week, I thought it was cool to have a whole talk on it by Elder Razband. I dug it.
Then I liked Elder Halleck, our Polynesian.
Yeah, from Samoa.
American Samoa.
Mm-hmm. Dude, that's kind of cool. He talked about faith, the mission fund, the widow's mite.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked his story about the president, or who was it, the president or the king?
Yes.
He worked in a couple King and I references. He said, the King and I, we did this. The King and I did this. But then he asked.
That was President Nelson did that the next talk.
Oh, that's right.
He said, the King and I. And you could tell there was a very subtle smirk on his face when he said that.
And then he goes into, is the Book of Mormon worth more than rubies and gems? Is it?
To which I snarkily said, well, couldn't I take the rubies and gems and then just go to the distribution center afterwards? Not very hard.
I don't know.
Yes, it's snarky. Yeah, he said, the full power of the gospel, Elder Nelson, the full power of the gospel of Jesus Christ is contained in the Book of Mormon. Period. Period.
This is the biggest gathering in D.C.
this
history.
This is the biggest presidential inauguration ever. Period.
It was kind of fun. It was fun listening to President Nelson with the idea of, like, he may soon be our prophet. He's like 92, isn't he?
93.
Yeah. That man's up there, but he's still got some vigor and vim in him.
It'll be really interesting when that happens. I think for many of us, especially people our age who grew up, Presidents Monson and Hinckley were kind of just always around. They've been in the first presidency since we were kids in the 80s.
Yeah, both of them.
So I feel like they've both played such an active role in our lives. And President Hinckley died years ago. And when President Monson leaves, it's going to kind of open up a new era of, okay, Nelson, cool. I'm good with it. It's fun. The priesthood session, Elder Renland talked about rockets, Rocket Man, which some people on Twitter thought was inappropriate given the North Korea situation. But anyway, he talked about Rocket Man. basically how, like, you need to set the rocket delivers.
The rocket delivers? Meaning?
I don't know what to tell you. My notes are scribbly on this one. They're scribbly. Talked about covenants.
I don't have anything.
I like Elder Renlund's. Elder Renlund's one of the ones I've come to enjoy the past couple of years. I think his talks usually deal with cool stuff. And the rocket one was good. I wasn't as bowled over as I have been with some of his other
talks. No.
Tell us if we're wrong on our Facebook page or on our website, folks. Let us know. Now let's see.
Elder Evans was prayer and revelation.
Yeah, that one was good.
Yeah. Elder Maines?
No. Yeah, Elder Maines. Let's see. We got Richard J. Maines. I actually have some notes here. Talked about how we need to work in tandem with our spouses, which I think is important.
I read that on the internet. I think it's true.
He said, the three, preside, provide, protect. That is our duty as priesthood holders. Preside, provide.
Talked a lot about integrity of the heart.
Yes.
We got to have integrity. I think integrity is an overlooked value.
Yeah. Well, he had that cool story about how his dad owned a company and he was older and he went with his dad on a business trip. And this guy, and they were the lowest bidder to win whatever it was that they did. I forgot. And so they were going to award them the contract, but the guy's like, look, here's what you do. You bid it up a bit more, so it's still under the highest one above it. I'll tell you what that is, and then we can split that difference. Like, you don't need the money, but, like, we'll get a kickback here together. It'll be great. And his dad just got up and was like, yeah, thanks, and just wouldn't do it at all. And you are correct, Al. Integrity is something that's lacking oftentimes.
Well, it's not focused on. We don't talk about it. We don't say the word integrity very often.
No, we don't. President Uchtdorf spoke. Sorry, do you want more?
No. I was moving us on too.
President Uchtdorf spoke about spiritual wellness. Spiritual ailments.
What'd you have for him? What'd you get there? We can heal spiritually. That's my note.
Well, I like that he spoke about darkness, because he said darkness is not an indication that there isn't light. Once again, we talked about the Earth's rotation. A lot of astrophysics this conference. Rockets, eclipses, Earth rotating. Darkness is not an indication that there is no light. We just have to get to the right place. So it's true. At some point, it's dark on the Earth, but it's light somewhere else right now. We just have to get to the place where there is light. It's not that it's gone. It's that we have to seek it.
Yeah.
Fair analogy. I'm into it. I liked it. And then Henry B. Eyring, my main note was from a meme we put up, that you have the capacity to receive revelation and to act on it fearlessly. Fearlessly.
Isn't that great, Al? I believe it's true.
Oh, man, our time's already getting long. This is what happens all the time. We're only on Sunday morning. I love the, by the way, the BYU beard thing that they're trying to push was pushing photos. They actually have a Twitter account of BYU for beards, where you can see nothing but general authorities with beards as photoshopped onto them. It's reasonably entertaining. yeah.
I liked Elder Irene kind of had a caveat for, I feel like there's sort of a push to remember that the leaders of the church are human beings too.
Yes.
Not to overlay this or project this idea of perfection on them, which, man, I think that's so important, because we get this like starstruck mentality with them sometimes, and then we're just shocked when they have like a moment of humanity or just imperfection or whatever it is. And it's like, hey, sometimes we're weak.
I really like Sister or President Bingham. I love the New Relief Society presidency and the stuff you see them doing. And she gave a great talk on healing through the Savior. She said, no matter what we have suffered, He is the source of our healing, no matter what it may be, which I thought was great. The valuable role we can play as peacemakers, finding ways to serve. I'm very impressed with this New Relief Society crop. They're rocking it pretty hard.
As
I like them.
They often do.
And then Elder Hallstrom, I think you saw this one, Al.
Yep.
Spoke a lot about sort of if we have the faith not to be healed, in essence, the way miracles work. What is a miracle? What defines a miracle? And sometimes a miracle is not what we expect, would be a good way to put it.
Yeah, where do we place our faith, right? Are we placing our faith? Well, it's interesting because this actually elicited another conversation with some friends of this idea that there's a study done where religious people actually, people with a faith in God do like more harm to their children with like forcing them to have medical procedures to save them. Like if they're sick and going to die, it's actually an atheist is like more at peace with letting their kids go than a religious person who has faith in an afterlife. You know, people that believe in what's to come work harder to keep people here than people that don't. And we sort of, you know, this idea, stay with me here, this idea sort of connected into as we have faith, we put our faith in like whatever will make the pain go away, whatever fixes our ailment right now. We're not necessarily being thoughtful about putting our faith in God or in Jesus Christ and letting, you know, do we have the faith not to be healed? Do we have the faith to come what may and love it? Do we, you know, like those are questions
The last time that sentiment would be posited on Sunday morning or even on the Sunday sessions, which I thought was very interesting. Do we have that faith not to be healed? It's not always going to work. I think it was later on, Elder. I'm blanking on the names. Out. My notes on Sunday afternoon got weak because I had to watch a kid and make food while it was going on.
Oh, so
I
didn't know what
it was written down. But I believe it was Elder Alonzo talked all about. I think it was his grandson. I don't think it was his son. But in giving a blessing and basically experienced a witness that he was going to die. And like, do you have the faith to accept that? If you receive that revelation, even to accept it. So that was interesting. Elder Bednar, my main points I got from this, sometimes we run so fast that we forget where we are going and why we are running. So like align your spiritual priorities appropriately. And then focus on the Sabbath and the temple. They are both, they are a sacred time and space specifically for worshiping God. I always appreciate that reminder because my Sundays are mixed outside of the Sunday block as far as how effective I am with churchy stuff.
Well, this was one that I was looking for, right? The idea of, you know, like going to your Sunday meetings and attending the temple is vital but insufficient. Only as we bring the Spirit and strength derived from those activities back with us in our homes. And I think, you know, when you're measuring the own cadence of your temple worship or the cadence of some of these spiritual activities that we go and participate in, we need to be focused not necessarily on the inputs, but on the outputs, right?
There we go. Well said. And that dovetails into his final point about sort of checklist Mormonism. He said, you know, stop treating the gospel like a task list, because it's not. It's not what it's all about.
Yep.
It was good stuff.
Elder Waddell.
Yes, Bishop Waddell was great. My main line I took away from it is that he said, there's a sad irony that when we are in need, that we often turn away from the one person who can help us.
Zach.
Which is true. Elder W. Craig Zwick was released emeritus. We had two of the people who got released spoke, which was very interesting. And another Lion King reference.
Elder Zwick, that guy was a staple.
He was around for a long time. So we had two Lion King references this conference. One of them more overt from Zwick, but also President Uchtdorf was saying, remember who you are, in the women's meeting. Fun times. But he was basically saying, hey, don't make social media dumb. Instead of seeing through the lens of social media, we need to look inward for the godly attributes to which we each lay claim.
Word.
That's a good remark. And then I started to fade out here because I had to do...
Elder Eyring.
Some other things. I was watching at this time. I just don't have... No, I know Elder Eyring, of course, spoke. If we stop trying after one burst of effort, the change will fade. I liked that reminder.
I loved his sentiment of President Monson's message stirred me too.
Yeah.
You know, the idea that like somebody stands up and says, read the Book of Mormon more. And Elder Eyring would be like, whoa. Yeah.
And that these men still learn. That's something I love. It's not like they approach anything like, well, I've learned it all. I'm an apostle. I've got a lot of stuff figured out, right? They still get counsel from their church president this deep into their ministries. And they're still like, great idea, President Monson. Going to apply it. Thank you. Thank you for helping interpret the Lord's will for us and helping us be better people.
In the home stretch.
Oh, boy.
Elder Ballard. Home stretch is going to be a Sunday quick one, afternoon. Folks.
Elder Ballard he laid it down a bit. He talked about not listening to those who are not ordained to speak. So the kind of the classic quit sniffing around on the internet.
Quit sniffing around, snuffer.
quit looking up church history online. Let us teach you church history, and maybe someday we'll do it as robustly as Richard Bushman can do. And also, he's
not listen
out
to those
MLMs.
Who have not been ordained.
Yeah, and then he kind of called out MLMs. He straight up just started saying, you know, don't seek after get-rich-quick schemes, things that seem too good to be true, all this stuff.
He hates Amway, this guy.
Twitter was ablaze with this, and this would delight me too, because all the Mormons I know who are doing Rodan and Fields.
LuLaRoe.
And Plexus and LuLaRoe, whatever these things are. I want them all to go away. I want filters on Facebook for MLMs, because I'm tired of it.
What?
So tired of it.
Elder Tad R. Callister.
That was kind of a boilerplate Book of Mormon is true. Here's why book.
We hear it. We hear it every time.
And then this is when I stopped being able to take notes, but I listened to some of it. I was paying attention, just not able to take notes on it. And I remember Elder Ardern of the 70, who I think is from New Zealand, spoke a lot about doubt and things along those lines. And I thought that was worthwhile. That's when I think I'm going to go back and make sure to re-listen to that one.
We're going
to
read that again.
I'm going to read that one again, make sure I'm not doubting. And then, of course, we talked before about Elder Nelson. I thought Elder Nelson's was this amazing meta talk about, so we just had conference. Let's talk about the conferencing of conference. And he recapped notes from going down the line of...
Elder Anderson.
Yeah, Elder Anderson, kind of going down the line of authority within the...
I hear you all like conference. I'm put conference in your conference.
Yeah, it was pretty great. So I enjoyed this conference.
Yeah,
I hope
all
of you did as
well. So good. No, it was this one...
It's a whirlwind.
This one, everybody that just came with us on that, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Sorry for my fast
talk. It was a pretty great couple of sessions. And Jeff, I'm with you. I think our goal as a Twim Nation people Let's go back and read through these or listen to them again.
I actually want to do a plug here for our buddy Wes over at the podcast Talks on Talks, a podcast exclusively devoted to going through individual conference talks and talking about them. So it's like this, but in long form.
You've heard Sunday School before? Get it on your podcast.
Yeah. So it's not Sunday School Bonanza, which you should also listen to this week. Now that we're back in session, get ready for Gospel Doctrine. Shoot us an old email, though. You know, at contact at thisweekinmormons.com.
Visit us on Facebook or our very active Twitter right now. Man, LDSConf on Twitter.
I love our Twitter. Also, quick plug for Patreon, everybody. Thanks to those of you who support us on Patreon with a monthly contribution to help TWIM keep the lights on, so to speak.
We need your $1.
$1 a month is all we ask of you guys.
You could save the children or help the TWIM servers.
You could donate to Puerto Rico. No, that's too bad. Donate to Puerto Rico, at least for a while.
I don't agree with this message.
But if you want to support us with $1 a month, that's all we're saying, go over to patreon.com. That's patreon.com/thisweekinmormons. You can just hook it up with your PayPal, buck a month.
Just buy, helps us. You're buying us a Twix bar. Stuff. Buy us a Twix bar each month.
And server space. But yes, thank you very much, everyone.
Hey, thanks, Jeff.
Everybody. Good seeing you, pal. Everybody, thanks for listening to TWIM. Hope you have a great week. Be well, be holy, and be happy.